At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Vuse is smooth, consistent, and intentionally simple. It's vapor done right. Because when you're free to focus on what really matters, everything just clicks. Find Vuse, that's V-U-S-E, Vuse, at your favorite convenience store.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026, RJRVC.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Talk to Me, Sis. I'm a happy girl today because I have my co-host back. Lisa's back with us after a very, very busy several weeks in her life. So we are thrilled to be back working as a team today. And we have a very, very special guest, which I think is going to be a really meaningful conversation for a lot of people. We have Sam Tomlinson, who is obviously dad to the fabulous Connor Tomlinson. And we are really excited just to bring his perspective and his thoughts on being Connor's father and what that's been like from little boy to the outstanding young man that he is today. So we are glad to have you here, Sam. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for asking me to join. I'm nervous as to what's going to happen, but I'm glad I'm doing it. So
I think it's
good to be back. Thanks for the welcome. And I'm glad you missed me because I missed you guys last week. It looked like it was a great episode. Great to be back. And thank you, Sam, for joining us this week. That's really good of you. Obviously, we are Connor's mom and dad. And, you know from the other episode where we had Mark and Tony, Connor's stepdad, on that, you know, Sam and I are not married, and we did go through a divorce. We've been pretty open about that. But I think it's great, and I'm so happy and grateful that you are joining us today. I think you have so much to add to the conversation. And I think, you know, what I think I said in some of the notes, I think the overarching message I want people to see from today is you can co-parent through this stuff, and it can be a positive outcome, even if it's not always picture perfect. So thank you for being here today. I appreciate you joining in the conversation.
Thanks again for asking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we're going to jump right in. We have some questions. And I just think it's really cool, really funny thing on the show. Connor breaks into a British accent quite a bit. And everybody speculated in season 2 that Connor was just trying to copy the Australian director. And just mimic him. That is not true. Connor gets it honestly from this man here. And Sam, I was just wanting to know if you would share with Nikki and I know some of your story, obviously. Who was Sam before Connor, before you met me, growing up? Just who were you and your experience, and that you are English and British from England? Just tell us all about that.
Sure. Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, I'm very English and very British. Oddly enough, I've just got to the point where I've spent more years in the United States than I'd spent in England. And that was quite thought-provoking. But my youth, I grew up, I was born just south of London. I lived there till I was about 12. And like every English kid, all I cared about was football or soccer. And I've said to people, if I was ever more than 5 feet away from a soccer ball, I used to shake. You know, I was like, it wasn't a happy day. So, I spent my youth playing soccer as much as I could. And when the soccer season was over, I pretended to do other things like cricket and tennis and sort of get on with things that way. I was lucky enough to have siblings. I have an older brother and I have a twin sister, and the magic of having a twin is it's almost indescribable. And so to have twins, you know, that we have, Lise, that's just another gift that really sort of is defining part of my life. But yeah, I grew up, and I was technically the first of the twins. So I was a middle child. I have an older brother. I was a middle child, and I was a classic middle child. I had a younger sister. My twin sister was younger by 20 minutes. So she was daddy's little girl because she was the only girl. My brother was the first son, and in England, the first son counts. And the one in the middle just kind of gets by, really. And I don't regret it. I don't begrudge any part of my life. I don't hold that against my parents in any way at all, not at all. But it was just that was sort of where I existed, and so I kind of became fairly independent. I learned to get by with minimal people in my life. Really, I had a small number of very good friends. I didn't chase others in the world to, you know, it wasn't popularity stakes or anything like that. And so I think that set me up for things I was able to do sort of later in life, when I ultimately was able to make a decision to leave my country and to move 3,000 miles away and sort of live a different life. But I was...
What was the reason why you left your country?
I met someone on the way to a wedding. That's what happened. And it was a wedding of a cousin of mine. My mother, who's passed, God rest her soul, had Irish family. She had Irish roots. And half of the family from Ireland had sort of moved to the United States, and some of the rest had moved to the UK. So we had cousins in the US. And I got the chance to go to a wedding of one of my cousins. And I needed someone to give me a ride to the church. And this crazy human being who turned up, a good 30 minutes late to pick me up. I'll pick up a friend of mine and I to drive us to the church, then traveled illegally every second of the drive to the church. We followed the bride in, and thankfully as she walked in and turned right into an antechamber, we rushed in and turned left and sat, and then she walks in 2 seconds after us. And it all got sort of funnier and more humorous as the night progressed. And so I got to, I met somebody that was impactful, and yeah, they sort of changed the direction of my life.
So that's how Simon came to America, as we got married. And then we had some issues. And I've been open about this on my journey, my personal story with people. And I think it helps some families too, just to see kind of the licks that our marriage took. You know, we had some fertility issues, and I've been very upfront about that. And that was hard for both of us. And I think that chips away at people. But then
just on that, I mean, I don't, just to anybody, we imagine that having children is easy. You just wake up one morning, decide you want to do it, and you go work the recipe, and you think it's all going to happen, and then you go through moments where it doesn't play out. And I think you discover a whole level of emotion and a whole level of grief that you did not know existed until you go through that. So my heart goes out to anyone who's been through it. What I'd say to anybody is just keep trying. Yeah.
And then obviously we were blessed with Connor, such amazing news. That was just such a special time to find out, hey, we were finally successfully having a child, and then it was a little boy. And I had always pictured, I think when I met you, I said, if I have a little boy, his name's going to be Connor. I just knew it in college. I knew I wanted a little boy named Connor. And thank goodness you were cool with that. And just in terms of before we had Connor, and then the twins came after, but before Connor's original diagnosis, were there any behaviors of concern that were on your radar? Anything you were seeing at all? Or, you know, because I know you were in finance and the business world, so you didn't really have children experience with younger children that I was too aware of. You know, did you see anything that concerned you?
Yeah. And so it's probably, let's call it an unfair advantage, right? Being having been married to you, because when I met Lise, she was just joining the New England Center for Autism, which I think became the New England Center for Children. So she had an awareness level that way surpassed anything that I had, and probably way surpassed the average for most people. So I think what I would have seen as what I'm sure I would have interpreted as just, it's just a phase of development. I think you were seeing stuff and you were bringing it to my attention a little bit earlier. What I would also say is that while we were, you know, when I first moved to the US, we lived in Massachusetts. After a couple of years, we went down to Florida, and you started to take on your own sort of students as a sort of a private consultant. And, you know, we saw students who were children. Students is, I don't know if it's the right word. Children's a better word. You were working with children who were more obviously impacted by autism than things I think we probably ultimately ever saw in Connor. And so that was the benchmark that I had. So I sort of measured things against that. And, you know, I watched nothing less than really miracles happen in front of my eyes with, you know, and you didn't pay me to say this, but the things that you were doing with, you were changing people's lives. And I was thinking about this before I got on this call. And, yeah, there is nothing I know beyond a shadow of a doubt. There is nothing I will do in my life that will, in no matter what job I've ever done, I'm doing or will do in the future, that will ever be as important or as impactful as what you were doing. So I got that. Yeah. I got that. That was my baseline. And then we had a child who you want to start by hoping. You start by hoping that every single thing is absolutely perfect. And you start with five fingers and toes, right? You start with an Apgar reading. You start with just, you know, mother and child are doing okay after the birth, right? And you build from that point forward, and you want everything to be just okay, just fine. And you don't want to question things. And I think, you know, in the those really early years, you and I were sort of... We were potentially different ends of the awareness range, and we kind of met in the middle. And probably thank God we did for Connor, because I was probably going, okay, I work long hours, and anyone who's worked with anyone who works in financial control in any organization, you'll know it's a time-consuming job. It takes a lot of time. I worked a lot of traffic distance away from where we were. So I didn't see things every day that you saw, but you would bring it to my attention, and I would note it, and I would recognize what you were saying, and I would try and go, let's not overthink it. I mean, obviously you were trained in autism, and so you were looking. You know, I think my baseline assumption, not fairly, but was, you know, autism, so you're looking for it. And I was like every new parent. I knew nothing about anything about being a parent. You don't have a clue. And so you're just trying to apply what you do know about life and go, is this okay or is this not okay? And I think I started off by going, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And then I started to realize, okay, it's a little different. Connor doesn't interact with other kids the same way. There are things that Connor reacts to, loud sounds, physical connection, like physical pressure connection, the absence of direct eye contact, the ability to just hear something and moments later recite it back. That were just I think were signs to me that there was something just unique about Connor, and unique from my knowledge. I don't define Connor as unique to anybody else. He was unique to my knowledge, and those were the things that I was seeing.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously we went through, it took a while. He was close to five. And I had started noting behaviors at 18 months, which you guys have heard this. So when Connor the night I got diagnosed, I think you remember at the time, and I know, Nikki, you went through this, we had to get two separate professionals at the time that our boys were getting diagnosed about, what, 21 years ago, 20 years ago, to kind of agree on a diagnosis. And ironically, I don't think it usually happens like this, but I just ironically, they both came in on the same day, and it was a Friday. Do you remember that night? It was a Friday night, and we went to that Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I remember, well, I just remember that day, right? I remember the day we went, and I don't remember the doctor's name, but it was, I mean, we went in, and I knew you already knew. And within about, what was it, 5 minutes? About 5 minutes, the diagnosis came back, and it was, shock. I don't know if shock is the word. It was more kind of, okay. And it wasn't a question about who was right, who was wrong. It wasn't that. It was just, okay. There's two ways to look at this right now. We look at it about what we can do, or we look about what we can't do. We worry about everything possible known to man, or we worry about today, and we worry about tomorrow, and then we worry about the next day. And I think your mind flies between those different time constructs, because you want to take the diagnosis and go, and we just got his entire life mapped out. That's an instinctive reaction, that we just got told something that's going to define our child for the rest of his life. And he's five, you know, he's late four or five. And you're going, I had to just go, I am not going to try and define every day for the balance of his life today. I am going to try and think about how today and tomorrow can be better, how we stay in this moment, and at the same time, how we recognize what this now means to a family. Because Connor wasn't and isn't, thank God, an only child. Connor has the miracles of his siblings that, you know, and you remember this, Lise, because we had a discussion about it before the twins came along. You came to me and you were upset and you said, I'm just concerned about the concept that if we have more children, that there won't be enough love and enough for Connor.
It was a fear, because I loved him so much.
And it was like, and I think, what did I know, right? But all I said was, that's not the way it works. The way it works is the greatest gift we can give to a child, if we are so blessed, is siblings. Because they're going to be there when we're not. And they're going to care about him when we can't. And that is the thought that I have right now. And also, love. Love isn't a contained thing. Love for your child, just the ability and capacity to love your children just expands as the number of children you have expands. So, I think knowing that this was going to impact the family, and having to figure out what was the right thing to do in the moment for the entire family. And, you know, obviously there was focus around Connor, but it was about everything. I think those were the thoughts I was going through that day.
And I want to just sit here for a second, and it's cool for me to kind of hear after all these years. I don't know if we've ever had a time to calm talk about this, but I think in that moment you were having those thoughts and that's where you were focused. But for people out there maybe going through it, or, you know, in that exact moment, I knew it, a waste of time. I remember, and I think I've talked about this in other podcasts, I felt like I burned daylight. I was mad at me. I was mad at you. I was mad at doctors. I was just mad. I was so mad. And that was my reaction. And it was like almost irrational anger. And I think Simon was going into solution mode. And I was trying to look backwards. And that was doing no good for anybody. I mean, I'm going to own that here, that I was a ball of anger and a ball of looking backwards. And Simon was trying to, okay, here we are, here it is, let's look forward. And I think just again, and not to be, just because it is a reality that we are divorced and it didn't work. And, you know, we both look like nice human beings, and we are. We are. But I think some of this is what wears. And I the only reason I want to shine a little light on that here is if this resonates with anybody out there, you know, it was the real emotions. That's his perspective of where he was when he found out and what he thought. And mine was, ugh. And the anger, I think, consumed me for a long time. And that's just the truth.
Yeah. And I trust that you're nobody listening to this is probably going to think for 1 second that what I suggest is that somebody should feel. I wouldn't start.
No, just that.
Yeah. But I count from the bottom up, right? I'm definitely glasses half full kind of person. And I'll count upwards and I'll take the blessings I can see and we'll tackle the challenges as they come. So that's just, I just threw that into that. That was my kind of, you know, that was my fight mode.
Yeah. No, and it's cool to hear after all these years. Well, I feel like we're leaving you out.
But one thing I wanted to comment, I loved what you just said, Sam, when you said that one of your initial reactions was to stop your own rise of maybe sadness or whatever and say you're not going to let this diagnosis define the rest of his life. I think that's a really good thing for parents today who are facing a new diagnosis, because that is the tendency. It was definitely mine. I mean, I thought, oh my God, this is it. This is it. You know, I mean, I'm like, what's going to happen? Now it's just this long road of fear and uncertainty and, you know, possibly outcomes that I don't want. But that's a great statement for people to keep in mind. It does not define, I mean, we are living, breathing examples. It does not define the rest of their life. And that's what we're trying to do with this podcast. So I love that you said it like that. You said that very well.
Yes. Thank you for that. Then, you know, not lingering on anything, clearly divorce took place and things happened. We were then separated and living apart. What was your experience, Simon, once we were divorced, kind of raising Connor as a single dad? During the time that you had him, you all of a sudden had these four little kids that were full-time going to be in your care for X amount of times a month. I was no longer there every day, or we weren't sharing the load together. What was that transition like for you to all of a sudden, oh, by the way, now you're divorced, you've got these four kids, single dad, and one has autism. You know, what was that experience like in the beginning?
It's like parenting. Start with parenting generally. You start by imagining your own inadequacies, right? No matter how much kind of you want to put on a confident front about how good a parent you are, how good a job you do, how well you understand, you're making it up every day, every single day. You're making it up one day at a time. And you're going, if I can, especially if you have a little girl, because you're trying to stay one day ahead of your little girl, because she gets so smart so fast.
So fast.
And you know, bless all my kids, but Anna was racing forward past everybody as a young child, and I was just trying to stay. You know, if I could, you know, hold a logical discussion and come out ahead with my young daughter, then I was feeling like I'd had a good day. So you start there, you start with that, and then you go, okay, on top of that, I've got to do things that are uniquely different for one of my children who's got this diagnosis, and how do I do that, and how do I still look after, do justice, parent my other children at the same time? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, you try your best. Okay. You just try your best, and some you're going to win and some you're going to lose. And I'm sure over the years, and I'm sure I get to when our kids have kids, we'll start talking about the way that I was as a parent, and it'll be pretty hysterical, right?
Yeah.
But you try. I mean, for me, it was, you know, my simple view was consistency, and I tried sort of consistency and balance. Those were the kind of the tools that I tried to use. So I tried to treat my children equally. I tried to I tried to be balanced in the things that I was doing. And I don't know. I'm blessed with my children.
I think you guys must have done a really good job of that, because Lise, you've always, you know, called attention to the fact that you never gave Connor, you know, necessarily special privilege or special consideration as far as not having the same responsibilities in the family. And that really shines to me as an outsider getting to know your children as young adults, that they treat him the same, you know, and he is just as responsible for his behavior and he is just as responsible for his role in the family as the other three. And that is a great thing to see.
And what's interesting to hear from me is like, there were those years, and these are the years that about this time of right after the divorce, like Simon and I weren't really speaking to each other. And so to hear that that was happening at his house, like, you know, the mindset was Connor's going to be just as accountable.
That's great.
You know, and it was because it was my mindset, and it was also my mindset to make sure I treated or Connor was raised in a way that I thought the world isn't going to cut him a lot of slack. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we did it with love and scaffolding. We weren't throwing him to the wolves. But I, you know, people always look and say, what did you do? We really kind of set the bar for him, right? Mm-hmm. Right, Simon? I mean, we scaffolded for him, but it was up there. I mean, with the others, as realistically as it could be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the others would look at it and go, it felt like we were prioritizing Connor, and it felt like the time that Connor had with us was a greater amount of time than they had. I'm sure they would have felt that. And I don't think they're wrong. I don't think that's selfish of them in any way. But we did. We took time going through the RDI program, relationship development intervention, and I'm so glad we did that, because I think it was the most meaningful therapy that we'd tried, and it enabled a connection for me with Connor, because I had to be involved in it. I had to do it. I had to participate in the sessions. We connected in a way that we weren't connecting any other thing. And I know, before I came on here, I went and I read back the book, My Baby Can Dance, and when he doesn't know, there's a chapter in it all about us. And I went back and was reading that, and you know, I was remembering that I used the line, it felt so much more empowering, rewarding, rational for me to be involved in the direct therapy than for me to be dropping Connor off at the door and coming back in an hour and hoping everything went okay. So, but that was time away from the others, and can't do a lot about it. It's what we do and what we give our children is a lifetime in the making. And at the end of it all, I hope at some point they'll say, yeah, it'll balance out in the end.
Yeah. So can you just tell people what My Baby Can Dance, just explain that, because I don't think I've ever talked about that except to maybe Nikki.
So it's that. Do you guys see that?
Yep. Right. Yep. Got okay. It.
All right. So
who's the author? Because I think people can get it on Amazon if they're interested.
Yeah. So it's multiple authors, because different authors. It's all about the Relationship Development Intervention Program in its early days. It's all based on the work of Dr. Stephen Gutstein. And I think you found this. And then you made a connection with somebody who was trying to become a therapist.
Certified. Yeah. Janice Geis. She changed our lives. Yeah.
She absolutely did. And if she ever watches this, Janice, God bless you. Okay.
Thank you, Janice. Yes.
So, and it's a book where they had a convention, and they decided they want to write a book about the therapy to sort of as part of in its early stages to sort of for people to reference. And anyway, Janice volunteered to write the chapter for the person who was newly getting into it. And so she asked us if we would be the subjects of the chapter. And anyway, so I did get a chance to go back to it and just sort of look at it and remind myself about things. As you say, this was 20 years ago, so it's not kind of yesterday. But It was a therapy that allowed me to make connections that I hadn't made before with Connor, and awesome. You know, I'm blessed for it.
No, that's amazing. Okay, so I just want to move on to the next question, and again, we can gloss, you know, just whatever you're comfortable saying. But is there any advice, Sam, that you would give a family that right now might be experiencing, you know, they've got a special needs child, their marriage is just not salvageable, they're in a separation or divorce? Is there anything that you feel comfortable, you know, lived it, got the t-shirt, you know, that you feel comfortable just sort of saying it to anybody in that situation? And we can talk about mistakes we've made. I definitely will own my stuff. I was not perfect.
Yeah. So firstly, and this, I just want to be careful in this area.
Yeah.
From the perspective that the one thing that sort of divorce teaches you is get out of the judgment business. Okay. So don't judge. Don't become a judge. Be very careful about what you define as advice or guidance or direction. So what I'm going to say is I'm happy to talk about what I've experienced, and I'll share that. If it's of any use, of any help to anybody, please find some silver linings in it. But I'm not making any recommendations, okay?
Right.
So I just
Perfect.
Want to say, I think the trouble with going through a divorce is you hit sort of an emotional zenith, right? I mean, you kind of go, you don't imagine you can kind of fall to the emotional depths that you do as mm-hmm. you go through it. And I guess for me, if I did try anything, it was I tried not to let that define my relationships with anybody else. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is the children. So, and I'm sure I didn't do it perfectly, but it would have been, no matter what you're feeling and what you, and yeah, I think for me, no matter what, the person on the other end of this is somebody that meant more to you than the majority of other people that you'll ever meet in your life, right? So try and remember that, right? So for me, it's like, no matter what they just said, no matter what that text was, no matter what that email was, just lift your hands off the keyboard. Try not to answer. Try not to answer, because at the end of the day, nobody wins. And if you can, for me, it was about, can I bring myself down to a level that would let me focus on being a parent and nothing else mattered, right? And that you just, as I've said before, you try to do that. And when you have a special needs child, firstly, all your children and all the parents will know this, every child picks up on everything.
Yeah.
They see everything. And more often than not, they can't interpret it. They just write a narrative for it. They take it, they see an emotional reaction, they see what's happening between the two people that are most significant in their lives. Mm-hmm. And they go, what is going on? Let me write a story about that in my head. And you may never know, and I can think about some of the kids, I may never know what the story was that they wrote. I know there's some of them are much more open about talking to me about it, and the others not so much. And there's no rush, and there's, you know, I'm one day, if they ever want to, we can talk about it, but you know they're doing that. So you try not to bring that into your time with them, and you try. And if you're lucky, more often than not, you don't let it impact it. No one's perfect. Every once in a while.
No one's perfect.
Every once in a while, someone's going to kind of go,
pop off, whatever.
What did you do? And yeah, but you try not to. And it's like, you know, like I, you know, I think that, again, remember at some point, and we've been divorced, what, 18 years now, right? So we were married for 11 years. We've been divorced for 18 years, and we're in a place now. I think about 10 years afterwards, 10 or 11 years afterwards, we started to have more rational conversations about it. And we started to be able to frame it in a way about what had kind of caused it. You know, we won't go into any of that here, but
no,
but it takes time. It just takes time. And I think if you having children makes you more interested in trying to get to that place than if you don't have children. So,
and we took the long road because it took what, 8, you know, 10
years. I don't know. I mean, I don't know, because all I know is our experience, and I don't want to tell somebody rush to get there, or tell somebody if you're not there in 10 years, you're never going to get there, because
they might.
And some people do it from Jump Street. They agreed to separate and just be co-parents wonderfully from minute one, that they realize they are better apart for whatever reason. And, you know, that's fine too. But I think, you know, more so for people who maybe were closer to both of us, Sam, and just people who know us, friends who were on the ride with us, I think just being able to see something like this today is just so huge. So, because it wasn't always amicable. It wasn't always great. And I think we did the best we could with what we had going on. And I just am grateful that now we're here, you know, it's the co-parenting. I mean, I look forward to now when we have grandkids or weddings, it's going to be great. Simon and Tony chat. I mean, they can hang out. I mean, we can all do things together. It's not awkward for anybody. And that to me is just, and that has tremendous impact on Connor, because Connor, so much more intense for him when there's tension or things not, it's really anxiety producing for him. So all of that just makes family get-togethers, and now hopefully extended family get-togethers. I'm hoping in the next 2 years we'll get to have a grandchild. That would be exciting. I'm in a rush. Let's do this. But I'm just saying, if that happens, it'll be cool to know, like, if I wanted to go to the hospital and Simon wanted, like, the kids aren't going to feel like they have to pick or choose, and that's a blessing.
I don't have to worry about that. Yeah,
and that's what's cool about this. And I just want people to see that, you know.
I would say there was one thing for me that that made this more manageable than it could have been, is I think pretty early on, no matter how raised the emotions were, I'm pretty sure that somewhere right early on in the beginning, we talked about the fact that we'd never let somebody into our children's lives that wasn't going to be good for them.
That's awesome.
And I think we pretty much held that. And so for people, and I've been thinking about this for a while, so it's strange, probably as good a place as any, but you know, I want to say my own personal thanks to Tony. Because Tony's been a good guy to my children. So
that's awesome.
And that's not easy to say, because you don't start your life planning for that. And anyway, I just want to say it.
Oh, thank you. I know that will mean a lot to him.
And y'all, me sitting here listening, I have no idea what it's like to get divorced. We've been together for 34 years. But let me just express, like, my admiration for the two of y'all having gone through that. I know your kids. I love your kids. Love them, love them, love them. They are wonderful young adults. Whatever y'all did, you did something right. You figured it out somehow. And, you know, my four kids, yes, they've had the same mom and dad in the house all these years, but it was far from perfect too. We struggled. We did a lot of years where we were just working roommates. And I would say that in front of Mark, and Mark would say it in front of me, because neither one of us was happy. And it was rough because we were just so overwhelmed with everything that was going on. And I say that just to any parents out there who are navigating a split or considering a split. it is hard either way. You know, it is difficult. Having a special needs child throws an unbelievable wrench whether you stay together or you don't. And what matters is how you finished. And I would say y'all finished the race beautifully because you've got four amazing people out there.
Yay. Thank you.
I love what you just said, Nikki. And it reminds me of we had a neighbor live next door to us in Massachusetts. And I remember, so this was pre-diagnosis for Connor. We had the twins. And he said, you know what? You know where you are right now? You're in the business of raising children.
Yep.
And it's like, no more profound words have I ever heard.
Uh-huh.
And he was exactly right. And it's like, and I would love to say to people, what's the way that you make a marriage work at the same time as you're in the business of raising children? And clearly it's not easy.
I think that's something that I don't want to call us old, but we are a little older people, can let these younger people know that it's okay. It doesn't necessarily mean that things are not going to work out. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with your relationship, but there are years where you are much more business partners than lovers, much more business partners than buddies. You know, you are running a small enterprise with all these children you've created, and then you throw some special needs and unbelievable financial obligation and unbelievable emotional pressure in there. You got yourself a tough road to hoe. It's hard. It's really hard. Mark and I were actually just talking about that. We just went for a little getaway. And we were just talking about that today, how we feel like we're coming out the other side of the tunnel. We're taking our youngest to college on Thursday. And we're like, oh my gosh, we literally like can look back now and say all those years, they were hard. I mean, it was a tough time. And now we're looking at how do we like reignite it? Not that things are, you know, there's no specific problem, but it is still going to be a process of like relearning each other without talking through kids, without talking through their schedule and arranging our calendar around what suits them. So it's just, I only say that just, I'm married 32 years. We haven't figured it out either. We don't know exactly what we're doing. And it's fine. And I would never want anyone to think that, oh, just because we made it, that it's been this easy ride or that it has not been. It has not been. We've been through a lot of years that weren't great. So it happens to all of us.
And Connor likes to live he relates to the world through TV and movies, right? We've known that from minute one. And when we try to take some of it away, he went to books. So Connor has a very romantic fairy tale view of the world. And I think that some of us do too. And that's fair. You get these stories that get put up for 90 minutes, 2 hours. But this is the real world. This is real life. And what's cool is obviously we've got this platform because of our sons. But it is nice to kind of let people peek behind the curtain and see the families that are, you know, the journeys that we've really all been on and what's really going on. Speaking of why we're here, the platform and all that, Simon, did you, when Love on the Spectrum became like this thing, and I remember when it hit for me is when they said, hey, the director wants to come to your house and meet you, meet Connor, meet your family. So the producer said that. And I said, whoa, it's like the needle on the record scratched. And I remember calling you. I remember specifically wanting to bring you into the conversation. What was your go? Where was your head? What did you know the show? Were you like, what is this? Just tell us, what were your thoughts, reservations, excitement, anything?
I think it was sort of mixed emotions. One, and people have heard the story about sort of how Jack kind of pushed this thing along for Connor. And that just like lit fire in my heart. Just, it's like when your siblings are watching out for each other.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And as we've kind of progressed in the show and you've seen all of Connor's siblings and how they're all impactful in his life. And it's like, you know, anyone who knows Anna will kill people for Connor. Right? and you see that, and the boys will stand in front of any harm to protect Connor. So that's fabulous. So I love, that was my first sort of, I think my first sentence was all about Jack had done this. And I was like, oh, that's great. And then I was like, oh, hang on a second. And then it was like, it was all about being defensive and saying, let's just make sure this has to do two things. One, zero harm can come to Connor. Zero harm can come to any of the other siblings. That's first. And then there must be dignity to the subject matter. The subject matter must be treated with dignity. So literally, I did that night, I binge watched the first US series, and I went, okay, all right, this isn't The Bachelor for people on,
yeah, right, doing tequila shots now.
Yeah, it's not Love Island for those on the spectrum. This is actually hopefully an educational journey for viewers that has, yes, it has to do with this concept of dating, but more so than that, it's got to do with this fundamental concept of connection, right? And it's like, yeah, and how the incidence of autism is so huge right now compared to where it was sort of, and diagnosis has changed all this, I know that, but 20 years ago, it's so different now than where it was even 20 years ago when Connor was diagnosed. So it's changed. And so it's like now everybody knows several people who are on, yeah, the spectrum, everybody, right? And it's like, you didn't know that before. So it's like, yeah, they know people, but do they have any clue at all what the challenge of being on the spectrum is all about? And not just the challenge, but the gift of it as well, because I will not say for one second in my life that Connor is not a gift from God. Okay. Yeah. So, and everybody to know that. So I was like, I was so enthusiastic in my head. I've got my left side brain is saying protect, 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 dignity, everything. The right side of my brain is going, they're going to get to see how amazing this kid is. And you say, you know what? People are going to say stuff and I'm going to go, I already knew it. I've known it for years. I've known it from birth. And so it was those were kind of the reactions. And once I saw that he was going to be treated with dignity, that kind of got me over the hump of it. Connor comes to see me every other weekend and lives with me every other weekend. But the show was obviously going to be made around where he lives with you, because he's there all the time. The filming of it would be much easier and all those kind of things. So I wasn't heavily involved, but also I didn't want to be involved, to be honest. I needed to be a little bit kind of coerced to even do this. So it wasn't important to me. And other than I didn't want anybody ever to think for a second I didn't want to be part of my son's life. And that's if anybody wants a message, that's the message. That's all. Right. Connor has a wonderful ecosystem around him, but Connor has a dad, and his dad's not going anywhere. And his dad would do the same things for his son as everybody else would do for their sons. And I'll do for all of my children. So, so I was nervous. I was nervous. And then
how about the global exposure and just that's where I got freaked out. Like, Nikki, did you think about people in England, Australia, they watch the show?
It didn't hit me until it happened. It didn't.
Okay. I was worried before. Yeah, I was.
I didn't think it would happen, honestly. I didn't. I just didn't think it was going to go that big. I really didn't. And then when it did, I was like, oh, yeah. No.
So
I think in life teaches us every once in a while that there is something so special and wonderful about people.
Yeah.
And we too often let the negative side of life drive, because it makes good press. And, I see the reactions to not just Connor, but all of the participants in the show.
Yeah.
And, I define this as it's such good, wholesome viewing. And it is heartwarming. And you read some of these comments, and these comments are heartwarming.
They are.
And then there's negative stuff, but that's the internet. That's life. There's always people with different perspectives, and they're entitled to them. I'm not going to tell them they can't. But I've seen some pretty wonderfully stated things by real human beings. And if 20 years ago when Connor got diagnosed, did we possibly ever imagine the impact he could have had on people?
Yeah.
No.
We were at a, and people who have seen it now by the time they listen to this, we were at a soccer match at Atlanta United. We go quite often to Atlanta United, but there was a couple of English sides that came over to watch it at the weekend. And we were lucky enough that somebody had watched this in England. that were on one of the teams. They'd reached out to their marketing team. They'd connected with us, and they'd got us to be able to just to go down and sort of be pitch side and sort of watch this match. And, you know, which extremely grateful. They're so wonderful. The people were so wonderful. We were treated so specially. But what was magical is we're down there. They give Connor a shirt with his name on the back. And then from the crowds up above, people are screaming down at Connor to just say hello to Connor. And he's, and it's like, and for me, what was wonderful and where this all started, this beginning of our discussion, is it was American people and it was English people in the same stadium calling down to say hello to Connor. And it was like, and he was waving back at them. And what you saw in their faces, it wasn't this kind of, it wasn't, yeah, look, I got a hello from a celebrity. It was, that's a guy I wanted to connect with. That's a guy I want to connect with. And when you see that as a parent, you're just like, just pours out of you. Just pours out. You just it's grab him and hug him. And
I know.
You go, we didn't know this 20 yeah. years ago.
Talk no. about full circle and more. Full circle and more. It's amazing.
And what I love about Love on the Spectrum or shows that it's like showing the world our special young adults, Tanner, Connor, Danny, Abby, David, all of them, for who they are, not being put into some silly competition on a tropical island and doing nothing like this. It's like people are falling in love and learning about the gift of someone on the spectrum and them just being his genuine, true, authentic self. And for people loving him, like we love him. It takes your breath away. And I guess the last question I have, because this has gone great, is just Simon, from when Connor was a little boy born, you've known him from minute one, his first breath, to now. That's what you're saying. He's going to be a footballer. You were looking at his feet. I'll never forget. I heard that.
Literally, when Connor was born, I just went, he's so long.
He was a tall kid. Tell us biggest changes, most notable, most like, you know, whatever. Just wrap it up as best as you want and just changes in Connor and then just whatever message you want to leave. And lastly, you know, we want you, we thank you for your time. If there's anything exciting that you want to promote for yourself, that you're working on a website, anything, you know, go for it here. If you want to do anything like that, we're happy to support you in that. But just last thing, wrap it up, Connor, you changes, whatever you want to do. Put a bow on it.
Clearly he's Connor can stand at the front of a room now and present to a room at levels way above me. I mean, these days I'm scared to death to do it, and Connor just stands there and just stands up and talks to hundreds of people.
He does.
And I guess the one thing I'd say is to people, I just say this: it's real. It's real. It's who he is. And he has a heart and a capacity for love and a capacity for enthusiasm and a capacity for happiness and a capacity for sadness and a capacity for challenge that just abounds. And I will never love any one of my children more than I love the other. I love them all, and I'm blessed, and I am as blessed to have each of them. But yeah, I know how blessed I am to have Connor. So, and to anybody else, it ain't easy. None of this is easy. And if you can, and you can find a way to count from the bottom up, I just tell you, life's easier that way. Okay, and society sets these crazy bars out there. It says the world has to be like this, and it has to be like that, and it has to be this, and people have to do this, and they have to achieve all these things. Just ignore it. Just let the path define itself. Walk it with the blessing that you've been given, and just be open to whatever comes along, and find the happiness that's there, because it's there. So that's all.
That's good.
Well said. Well, thank you. And is there any anything you want, any social media, anything you want to, you're doing, any fun projects you want to feel comfortable promoting that you want to talk about?
I would like to say Tottenham Hotspur, good luck in the Premier League. And I would like to say England, this is our World Cup. Bring it on.
Okay, there we go. Well, Cy, thank you so much for being here with us. Nikki, I know you didn't get a lot of playtime, but thank you for just...
I appreciate being allowed into the conversation. It was very interesting, and I think it's going to be very helpful.
This is great. I do think it's going to help a lot of people. So thank you guys so much, and look forward to another episode next week. Nikki and I have some fun guests lined up, but we'll just leave it kind of dot, dot, dot. And we'll wrap it up with our typical love you, mean it.
Love you, mean it. Thank you, Sam, so much.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you. Thanks, guys. Lastly, everybody, if you liked hanging out with us today, do us a favor, hit the follow button, leave a rating, or drop a quick review. It helps more than you know. And if you really loved it, send it to a friend who needs to hear this. And if you're interested in sponsoring a future episode, please send us an email at talktomesismail@gmail.com. Thanks for listening and love you mean.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.